Welcome to No More Booze, the podcast. I'm Olivia Farrelly, and in every episode, I explore the role that alcohol has in our lives. I interview people who have decided to live their life with no more booze. We'll explore their relationship with alcohol, how it made their life better, how it made their life worse, any lessons they've learned along the way, and what advice they would give to others who are contemplating a life without alcohol. So whether you are sober curious, you're sober serious, or you're already living your life alcohol-free, this podcast will provide inspiration and motivation as you begin to untangle and reassess your relationship with the booze. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to No More Booze, the podcast. I have a fabulous guest on today. She is a great pal of mine. We met actually this time last year on Yvonne Trakian's manifestation course, became great pals. Welcome, Joanne McCarthy Colbert. How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you for having me. This is brilliant.
I'm delighted. I was saying to you there, right? So every so often I meet people who are absolutely, you know, I talk a lot about the stages of change model on this, excuse me. And I meet people who are literally so at the action phase, they don't need me. Right. All they need is for Olivia to say, yep, you're going to give up the booze. And that's it. And Joanne, you're one of them people.
Yeah, I didn't realize it. I actually didn't realize it. I'm over a year now, the 27th of December, 24. I had my last drink on the 26th, which was St. Stephen's Day. And it was not like I drank a whole pile on that day. I drank a whole bottle of wine from, you know, now when you have your Stephen's Day dinner, until like 12 o'clock that night. So it was just, you know, sipping away in a few glasses of wine with family. And my wife's family had like a really big day on St. Stephen's Day at their house. And, you know, you have that drink culture at it. Like, well, just normal culture, really, just normal kind of party. And nothing major happened. I just woke up the next day and thought, I'm just going to give it a rest. It wasn't like I wanted to go on dry January or I wanted to do this. I just like, I'm giving it a break for a few days now. Because like that, from practically the 1st of December up until the 26th, I was supping glasses of wine here, there and everywhere. Yeah. So that was it. And then we went on Yvonne's challenge. I met you on the challenge and you put up your profile name. And I was like, grey area drinker. And it was like, honest to God, it was like the switch just flipped. And when you say I was ready, when I look back in hindsight, I was. But at the time, I was like, oh, my God. And I could feel my heart kind of beating and this bit of excitement in my tummy kind of going, oh, my God. It was like what I needed was a place to situate myself. Yeah. I couldn't situate myself. I wasn't an alcoholic, but I had numerous times looked up AA meetings to better understand myself. But I couldn't go because I just thought, I'm not there. You know, I'm not there. But I needed just a place to situate myself. And then when I came across your thing, I binged all your podcasts, binged every one of them, listened to every one of them. I resonated with every person, and I mean every person. And then I contacted you and we joined the group and that was it. I never looked back. Not that it wasn't hard, but I just never looked back.
Yeah. And you know, when we do a thing and it's the readiness, how ready you are for change, ready for change, readiness for change, right? And like you were 10, 10, 10. It was like, you know, akin to maybe a horse waiting to go for a race. The thing went back and you were gone out the tracks. And it's like all you needed was that kind of, this is who I am. This is the parameters of which are around a grey area drinker. I can resonate with every one of them. And I'm just going to apply some of the, tools, apply some of the rules. Like one of the rules being, we can't moderate, so don't even try. Yes. Let me lead the way and tell you that you won't be able to moderate. Listen to me. And then, you know, and you stop chasing that dream. So like, and it's grey area drinkers are like all or nothing drinkers, no off switch drinkers, like can't have one
One always leads to more, but you can
Yeah.
easily have none. So, like, I know exactly how you felt when you heard that, because I know exactly the point of the road that I was in when I heard Jolene Park. And I went, sweet Jehovah,
Yeah.
that's me. Because, like yourself, I hadn't reached a rock bottom. I wasn't physically dependent on alcohol. I didn't physically need it. So, I didn't, even though I had AA in my phone as well, I had rang them one morning because I did, like you said, I didn't know where to situate myself, but I knew
Yeah.
I had to stop feeling like this. And yeah, is it do you know, okay, so you gave up on the 27th, but kind of talk us through. So, you know, there's things that precipitate like this big feeling. Like, what were the things, do you know now, having reflected back, some of the things that was kind of underneath? You know, were you like, oh, this is a load of bollocks, or oh, you know, what were you kind of thinking in the kind of
Yeah.
meetup?
Like I was never moderation. You said moderation never came into my stratosphere ever, ever, ever. I started drinking, I'd say, geez, was I 13 or 14? And like that, zero moderation from that point, zero. You know, now I lived in a very, very, very rural spot, but we had neighbors and our cousins. We were all together. There was like a gang of 10 of us. And like you know on in that back in like whatever how long ago was that maybe 25 years ago the culture was that your parents went out and you were at home and yet we'd all kind of congregate then into you know come on let's meet here and at Christmas time my dad would always had like a huge Christmas party a huge party at home loads of drink loads of cocktail making bits and pieces the whole lot so our house was the house that was like let's take the drink from the drink press because no one would see it. And we'd be getting bottles of brandy and replacing it with tea and all of this kind of rubbish, really. But like the culture started then. It followed on. And I think that just continued. That really just snowballed right through my 20s and into my 30s. And then myself and my wife decided we were going to have kids. And that's not the easy path. Anyone that has to go to any fertility treatment, be it heterosexual, homosexual, it doesn't matter. It's a hard path. And so when I had my first daughter, I obviously stopped drinking when I was pregnant. That was no issue. And I didn't drink for 3 years after that. But the difference was I was doing it out of fear. I was not drinking out of fear. I was petrified that I wouldn't be a better mother. Like in hindsight, I realized I probably had some kind of postnatal anxiety or depression. And it was fear. It was all fear-based. And you know something that's fear-based, you can't stay at it too long because it's all on based on fear. So when I had my first drink when she was about 2.5, maybe. And I just nicely, because I was still all in fear, all in fear. Then I got pregnant with our second daughter. And when I just remember thinking the whole time throughout my pregnancy, I would love a glass of wine. And I joked with my wife, I'm going to carry a quarter bottle of red wine in my hospital bag now. And because I'm just really want a glass of wine. And I think having my second daughter kind of knocked that postnatal anxiety out because I just had to kind of raise my hands. You know, motherhood, raise my hands and go, my God, I just have to take every day as it comes, and that's it.
Absolutely.
So the fear of not being a good mother kind of left, and I was like, oh, that's it. I'm back on the booze. I'm having a great time. And I did really like that. The frequency of my drinking didn't change, but when I went out. When I knew that my girls were being looked after and they were minded, I was hell for leather. And I never went home to my kids drunk. They were always either gone to someone's house or I made that a rule for myself. But it was the next day, and I remember having them, and they wanted to go to, I don't know, was it like a circus or something was on the next day after this particular thing? I couldn't go. So Katie, my wife, took them. And I remember getting the Snapchats, and I thought, you know what, it's fine. I'm at home. I deserve a day to just be on the couch anyway, you know? And I was just giving myself permission for things that I knew deep down weren't the way I wanted to live and exist. And then I think the real thing came when I just slowly over time, there was just this moderation kept coming into my head, moderation, moderation, moderation. And I couldn't. And I remember work trying to go like 6 months of drinking before I actually stopped of going, no, I'm going to moderate. I'm going to moderate now. I'm going to moderate. But like I knew the minute I'd open a bottle of wine, like there was definitely going to be half of it gone, if not all.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, there was definitely signs coming up to the point of, because like that, looking up AA, there's a close relative of mine who was a very heavy drinker before, and then he stopped. He's big into his AA, he's doing amazing, he's doing really well, he's years and years off of it. And I remember contacting him, and then I remember deleting the message.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I can't situate myself there either. And
Yeah.
it was that. It was like, and that's just my personality as well. I have to situate myself somewhere. And
Yeah.
then once I'm comfortable in that, then it's done. It's done. It's
Yeah.
over. We're over with.
Do you know what kind of strikes me there? And so you had 3 years of giving it up. So I'd say there was massive work done there in terms of like vitality. I know like you had a young baby or whatever, but like in terms of vitality and, you know, energy and like you learn stuff in that 3 years as well. I know it was like, you know, done out of fear, and we do so many things out of fear. Like, I cannot tell you how much should I do out of fear. I'm constantly looking over my thing for the man, and you know, or they or them. Like, I'm, but you know, so that 3 years, it seems to me like it taught you a lot.
100%. Like that
Yeah.
3 years told me. But I suppose I kept excusing it because I was like, no, it was COVID, so we couldn't meet anyway. And, I kept kind of pushing it away
Yeah,
as
but
if it meant
COVID,
nothing,
yeah, oh God, it meant a lot though, because COVID was a huge accelerator of people's drinking, especially women's drinking at home. And then there was all this kind of very pro drinking memes that were in social media about, you know, being on Zoom calls and pretending you were drinking tea when it was really wine. So it was, you know, it was kind of sold as funny, but it wasn't, because it really affected an awful lot of people. But to stay off it during COVID was a big
Well, I
feat.
had been like my daughter was born in October 19, so COVID came in March 2020.
Yeah.
First of all, I was delighted that I didn't have to go back to work because I was
Yeah.
so anxious about leaving her, So I was like, yes, for me, this is just me personal. I know it's been horrendous for some people, but for me personally, I was like, oh my God, all this time with my daughter at home, I'm loving life. And I was also still breastfeeding. So I was like, no, there's no alcohol, very disciplined. But I almost needed an excuse to not
Yeah.
drink. Instead of
Yeah.
choosing myself, I had to put it on something else. Well, I'm
Yeah.
breastfeeding, no. And I have a young baby, no.
And isn't it funny, because sometimes people get into sobriety or alcohol-free living accidentally, and there's no kind of plan behind it. But there's a plan behind you now. You know what you're consciously doing, like you're doing the work, all that kind of crack as well. So anyway, right. So you gave it up for the 3 years, you went back on it after your second daughter. And then, so how did that look between then and when you gave up?
Yeah, it was like that. It was just this period of time that I didn't go out often, but when I did, it was like really, I just thought, oh, I have a break now. I'm going to, have a break. I went out with my friends and, we were just, I remember one particular night and like drink doesn't suit me whatsoever. No drink ever suited me. I was never meant to be a drinker. I would get so sick from drink, like really sick. But do I love the taste of drink? I love the taste of a pint of Guinness. I love the taste of a pint of Heineken. Like I'm not a spirits woman. I loved them. And I remember this particular night, I'd already had enough. And I remember going for a pint of Guinness and I was drinking it and I really had enough, like, and it was probably one of the last memories I had of the night. And I took another sup and I kind of gagged. I was kind of like, oh, I think I've reached my limit here. I just gave myself 5 minutes of not taking another sup. And then I supped again. And it was like, okay, that's gone down. Keep going.
Yeah.
This kind of like my body telling me these things the whole time and just ignoring it. And you know, it was just when I talk about it now, I'm like, oh my God. You know, when you actually vocalize it and you hear yourself saying this, it's like madness. It's madness.
But it's not, because when everybody around us is doing it, and when everyone around us makes excuses for it as well, you know, they're like, "You're grand, Jesus, should we all forget the night? And should we all, do you know what I mean?" So people really actively encourage it to kind of keep going as well. So it doesn't seem that abnormal when everybody else is doing it.
No, it doesn't, to be fair. And even we went home early that night because we'd been out early. And it was like, oh, for God's sake, do we have to go home? I had an ocean of drink inside me, an ocean of it. Like, and I didn't need any more. Like, but that's again, I didn't have a stop button. Even if I went and, God's sake, I would come back out and start again, you know.
Same.
But then I mightn't touch it for 3 months then. But it was when I did it. It was just never and never an off switch.
So classic gray area drinking. Like, I'm your little twin over here, Joanne. So, okay, so the 27th of January last year, or sorry, December came.
December, yeah.
And then, like I said, you were literally straight out the gap. You were like, you were a woman. It's like, so once you decided where you were situated, this was your identity, this was who you are, and off you went. And that was it. Like, it was a click, you were done. Like, the dog in the street could see that. Like, it was just so obvious. And then, like, you were straight into enjoying all of the bits.
No, I will say I am so grateful that from the 27th of December, I think to around the 17th of January, I didn't realize that I was off. That I didn't know that the 20 that that last glass of wine on the 26th of December was my last drink. And I didn't know it for about 3 weeks. And I'm glad for that kind of, you know, surprise kind of thing, because I thought, well, I'm after doing 3 weeks, so I'll just do another week instead of like, oh, let's do another, you know, I didn't have that pressure, I think, for that 3 weeks. And then it was still hard. That year was hard. That year was hard because it's a you get, and you've often said it on your podcast, in the first year you get kind of the first of everything. The first of everything. And I will say for about 6 months, I pulled back. I couldn't go to some things because I just thought it's too much, it's too testing, it's too intense. I could be swayed, you know, and I didn't want that. So I did pull back from socializing a lot. But again, then I needed the time to kind of find myself in it. But I do wonder though, Olivia, with it, with, I wouldn't say it's an addiction, but with, I'm going to say a habit, but it's not even a habit. But like, is it that we just pass it on to the next thing? Because I what I have found is that I have probably emotionally it. So I had lost like 2.5 stone, and I feel like. I not feel like I have put that back on, which is fine because I'd sooner that than sick days and nights, you know.
So we can kind of break it down. So, like, we okay, so how we cope right with things. So, like, our ability to withstand stress. You mentioned that they're like overstimulation, our ability to be able to, you know, and we've things added into your life now, and I've got things added into my life, right? So you have a full-time job, you have a wife, you have a couple of kids, you had your own business and have your own business, right? So there's your demands left, right, and center, right? So, like, alcohol maybe was used to soothe that, or for you as a place to come back to yourself. I'll often notice that I'll come in, if I'm any way anxious, I'll have like lashed in two slices of toast or like cheese before I even know it, because it's just a way of, we're always looking, well, first of all, we're always looking away from away from pain and towards pleasure. So, like, I think anyway, this is just knowing myself, I'm always looking for a buzz of something, right? I'm dopamine deficient, right? So whether that be mayonnaise, right, those little Cheese, right? A cheese toasting. Cheese stimulates the same parts of your brain as crack cocaine, right? So it is, it
Really?
actually, yeah. So like cheese makes us feel really high. Whatever, like, wouldn't you prefer now if you were like coming in doing like 50 burpees if that was your re-addiction? Do you know what I mean? But
Yeah.
look, it, we find what we need to balance the body. So if it's not, you know, the booze, if it's not the sugar, it's maybe the cheese, it might be the little vintage addiction of like
Yeah.
buying the same tops in three different sizes. Do you know what I mean? Because I like that top and I am three different sizes depending on what day of the week. Do you know what I mean? So I
Yeah.
suppose it's just our way of regulating and bringing our body back into a bit of balance.
Yeah, I suppose that's it. Because I suppose when I hit the year, it was like, oh, gee. I felt like it was like I just needed to make that mark and just get there. Because after that, it was like, okay, I've spent the year talking myself, being nice and kind to myself, and just working on being alcohol free. That now I'm like, okay, I've that nailed. Now I can focus on myself again. I can focus on my walks and my healthy eating and doing all that again.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we have to give ourselves a break. And what we always say here is like self-compassion. So you can't do it all, even though we're meant to do it all. And there's so many stimuluses. And, you know, I asked you before we started recording, and like, are you highly sensitive? And you were like,
Yeah.
yes, right. And again, this is probably the most common thing that I see. And I said, do you think you have ADHD? And you were like,
There's something.
there is, you know,
Yeah.
that's probably the most common thing I see in people is that kind of impulsivity, is
Yeah.
maybe the high sensitivity, it's the maybe restlessness, distractibility, all those kind of things as well. So yeah, and there's a Catherine Gray has a book coming out soon. It's called Little Addictions, and she talks about the propensity for people to develop addictions is there's three things, and it is if you're neurodivergent, the age at which you start doing the behavior, and so the earlier onset, the more likely you are to develop a problem with it. And the third one was then ACEs, so adverse childhood experiences, right? So I think probably, you know, I say this on the fucking podcast every week that I think I've ADHD. I may put my money where my mouth is and get a wee test and like literally say it with conviction or whatever. But yeah, so I think there's, look, there's a high correlation between ADHD and then, you know, running into
I definitely agree with you on that. 100%. It's like even sitting here, I was thinking, oh my God, now how am I going to stop fidgeting? Because I'm just like, my leg, I'm lifting my leg, putting my leg down, put my hand over here, touching this, and I'm like, oh, mother, thanks be to God, nobody can see this Zoom because I'm just so fidgety.
And I'm very impulsive. Like before we started recording, I jumped away from the computer to put on the electric blanket. Do you know what I mean? Left you to sit by yourself. So come here. Do you know what I heard you say earlier there as well? Like deep down, you weren't kind, you were misaligned with your values. Like that's what I heard. So and that was a key factor for me. So you've all these gorgeous hopes and desires and goals for yourself, yet the little bollocks drink, even though when you unexpectedly have a couple of drinks at the weekend, even though you think you take two steps back during the week and then, or two steps forward, and then you take five steps back, you know, when the alcohol comes in. Maybe talk a bit like that, a bit around that, and how you kind of realize that, you know, they weren't a good match, the booze and your values.
No, definitely not. And to be honest, I think I don't think I really discovered who I was because, like, for me, I had parents who split up in my late teens. Then I met a woman who is now my wife, but I didn't, even at 19 was when we started going out. I never had before labeled myself as being gay. I had had boyfriends and all of this. And next thing I just met this woman and I thought, oh my God, this woman is my best friend. You know what I mean? My best friend. And then it was like, I don't know if this is normal. And so then I was left definitely for a couple of years so confused. Like we were together, but we didn't tell anyone. Everyone thought we were just best friends, and and then people are like, they clicked it, and then it's just so confusing. So I went through like the first 5 years of my 20s very confused,
Yeah.
and then I settled into life and the life we had, and we had a fantastic life. The both of us played loads of sports, and we had so many friends, and the drinking culture around every sport, but like we literally, I would still talk about it to say I don't know how any one of us is still alive because of what we did get up to. They're the best days. I will never regret them. I wouldn't take one drink out of those nights because that was the life I was supposed to have at that time. But and it was, I don't know, was it more acceptable then? But then I got into my 30s, I changed my career, we had kids, and I think it was the kids that made me go, what am I doing with my life? What am I doing? We had a great time together. Myself and my wife were together 22 years now, and we had a great time. We went on holidays, you name it. Like we just had fantastic friends. We still have a fantastic group of friends, and we lived our lives. And then when the kids came along, it was like I went very much on a journey of self-discovery then, and thinking, who am I? So we had our first daughter when I was 35. Then I had two miscarriages in between my eldest and my second. And then I had my second girl. I think I was 38. And then when I hit 40, I remember, honest to God, Olivia, it was like a switch went off in my head when I hit 40. And that was 6 months before I gave up the drink. It was like this moment. This wonderful moment, this fantastic moment of like, I am going to find myself. I am putting myself first. I am doing this for me. I'm about to grab life and literally make it mine. And I did. And so, for that 6 months before I gave it up, yes, I had moments where when I went out, I didn't stop drinking, but I was almost on a high as well from this. Taking life is mine, and it did. Everything changed for me at 40, and then it was like, okay, I'm giving up the booze. That's it. I'm done, and it just all aligned with my life.
Yeah.
Now, slightly things have changed because perimenopause hits, and you're who am I? What day is it? Oh my God. For the
Oh
first time
my
in my life,
goodness.
I had a fantastic memory. I could memorize numbers, like number plates, dates, all of those brilliant things. Even in my job as an interior designer, I would remember, and I still do. There's some particular things that I can really get a grasp on, but I started to have to use my calendar in my phone and
Yeah.
reminders. Like Siri and myself are like, set
That's it.
reminders. Come on,
Yeah.
put a reminder on for this, that. And it changes life, and I'm so grateful that I'm off the drink in this phase because I would be an absolute mess, I think.
Yeah. And it's funny, somebody rang me, like a random person today rang me something to do with something. And I was literally started telling a random woman on the phone about my menopause. And I said, you know what? So it's so foggy in there. Now it's a bit better since I started the HRT, but it's so foggy in there. I'd literally love to take my brain out, give it a good rinse, and then put it back down. Because I can't access me. Old me, do you know what I mean? Which is
And
strange.
you're on the cusp of something all the time. It's like, what's that? What's the name of that thing? And it's just that the fog is making it foggy. It's there, and it's so, I don't know.
It's tough. But do you know what you described there? A huge amount. And like, so but lots of people give up the booze and like, they don't do the work, right? And then they have to come back and do the work then. Because I coach a lot of people who have taken big breaks from alcohol, right? And then gone back. And the difference is the big breaks weren't accompanied by the work, right? And you're describing the work there. It's the thing of getting to just discover who you are. So we peel back the layers. So there's the cook and there's the cleaner and there's the daughter, the mother, the wife, the whoever. But this, it's the journey of discovery. Right, I know that's pukey, right? But who are we? Like, like alcohol stunts our development. It absolutely does. And I've described how I went back to being 17 again. Like, so I wasn't very emotionally mature. I didn't have a bandwidth for coping or whatever. But like, you peel back the layers and you have to build yourself up. So you have to kind of discover who you really are. So what's my purpose? What gives me joy? Mm-hmm. The most common thing I hear, I swear to God, other than the fact that everybody I work with has ADHD, is like when I go on a Zoom call, it's like the nodding dogs. Does anyone feel like this? And they're all, we must get a mass discount off somebody now, but for all the tests. But the most common thing again is that... Oh, yeah. Sorry, I nearly forgot there. But that they secretly thought that they thought they were extroverts, but they're not. They're introverts who alcohol made extroverts. And now they just love the bed. They love the knitting, the crochet, the running. Like they're not mad for the pub. They're not mad for the session, like the sober session or anything like that. They're just content to read and meditate and access who they really are and set some goals and work towards achieving them. Is that you?
That is, but you know what's nuts about that, Olivia, is I always thought, right? I always thought that I was an introvert and that alcohol made me an extrovert. When I stripped myself back, I actually realized I am an extrovert in a very different, without the mask. Okay. Because I think drink gave me, even in my family, there's five girls. I'm the second eldest and we have no brothers. Oh, and you know, in the family, oh my God, you can imagine. we're all kind of close, like we're very close. So you can imagine now my poor father inside in the house at us at puberty. But when, that's my thought there now. There we go. There you go. Thanks, Perry.
Oh, you're an extrovert. You're an extrovert.
Yes. So in my family, I was the joker. I was the one that made everyone laugh. I was the one that kind of lifted the spirits. I took over. I was kind of a very mothering person as well. So that was my role. And I was very aware that I had a role in my family.
Yeah.
Placed on by me, not by my family, which I now know. And so I think when I was drinking, I played on the mask of that more. So I was the great crack. I was up for anything. I wanted to stay out all night kind of stuff. But when I stopped drinking, I thought, oh, I'm just my normal introvert now. I'm just going to, you know, sit here and just be my normal introverted self and, you know, happily read and do all these lovely things. And I actually have never been more social. I've never been more social. I have gone to things on my own now and so happy to do that. I am like, I just realized how much of an extrovert I actually am.
Yeah.
You know, and it's amazing because I'm an extrovert myself, just me, no mask.
Yeah, which is amazing. And look, I think everything, like we said, everything's on a spectrum. You can go through very, you know, maybe quiet phases of your life or very extrovert. I'm an extrovert. I get massive energy from people. I love the people. I'm a big fan of the people, right? All of the people, right? I can, and then because the ADHD, I forget maybe I don't like some of the people. I never hold a grudge, which is a lovely quality because I can't remember that I hate. Like, you could be my sworn enemy and like I'd see you in 3 weeks and I'd be like, oh my gosh, how are you? And then Kelly would be like, she! Or whatever, you know. But yeah, no, it's lovely getting to know yourself in this way, isn't it? And another part of the work, and I don't know if you can resonate with any of these, but it's like regulating who we are, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously, like, alcohol makes us more impatient, right? It thins out our nerves the next day. We're not as tolerant of all of the things. We're maybe more stressed out. Maybe our sleep was impacted, you know, all this kind of things. We don't operate at 100%. So we're a lot calmer. Have you noticed that you're calmer?
Oh, much more calmer, definitely. Much more like, even sometimes I wake up the next day because I love Heineken Zeros, love them.
Yeah.
Love them. Now, you can't drink too much. You'd literally 3 or 4 bottles and I'm done. But I do love them. But I find that I get up the next day and I'm like, oh my God, jeez, I don't feel great at all. Like, you know, I feel like I have a hangover kind of thing. And then it's like, penny drops. I don't know. Is my body still getting used to some kind of psychological thing about going out and having my Heineken? Because I don't feel like I'm missing out and having
Yeah.
my Heineken Zeros. And then I have to remind myself that no, you didn't drink last night, you know,
Yeah.
and you had a great night. And then I realized, actually, maybe I'm just tired a small bit.
Yeah.
But I do find I've just, and then my mentality switches. So I don't know if that's something to do with ADHD or whatever, but it's like I need to remind myself, no, you didn't drink, remember? And then it's like I'm back in the world again. But literally, I'm not dumbed down because when I was drinking towards the end, a good 5 days was gone because of the first 2 days I'd be sick, and the 3 days after that I'd be an anxious mess. Anxious mess. And the clarity like that, my head is always going. There's something always in my head. Even when I sleep, I dream so vividly. Like there's just always something going on in my head. And because of that, it was so hard to see clearly and make sense when you had drink because you were just foggy. So you had to push all that stuff away until you could deal with it 5 days later. You know, that
Absolutely.
kind of feeling. And then now it's just like I embrace the whiz of my mind, that kind of I embrace it and I go through it. And I think because I'm a creative person, and I think being a creative person, I think we all are actually, to be fair. Being a creative person, you're constantly generating ideas and coming up with these things. And since I've given up the booze, my career even has skyrocketed because I'm getting ideas, I'm working on it the minute it comes in, I'm teasing it out, I'm pushing it away, I'm taking what's meant for me, and then it just takes effect, you know, and it's yeah, I can't really put words on it, but it's just like it's
There's no
just
blocks.
manifesting. No blocks, no blocks.
And you can see the bigger picture. So there's
Yes.
nothing that clouds your judgment. So you're able to take a bird's eye view and you're not getting bogged down with the dread. So you know the way when you wake up with a
Yes.
hangover, you're like, oh, I hate this day. I just want this day to be over, you know? And the things that I have seen people achieve after, like, I obviously get loads of texts and stuff from people, and they include me in their little soberversaries. Actually, somebody I worked with had a 2 year soberversary today, which is stunning. But like the level of stuff that people achieve in terms of promotions, in terms of like actually climbing mountains, going back to university, being offered PhDs, like it is just unbelievable, getting first class honors, you know, all these amazing things that they would never have done beforehand. And then they keep
No.
surprising themselves, which is gorgeous, which is what we might get into, which is what something we have in common, which is that you mentioned it there, just this beautiful art of manifestation, having the
Yeah.
clarity to find out what we really want out of life. Putting it on the old vision board or whatever, or the vision wall, vision papers, whatever it is, and then bringing it into life, you
Yeah,
know?
a
And
hundred percent, yeah.
isn't it? And having the wherewithal to realize that, like, it actually works and the things that you put your mind to, you actually can achieve.
Yeah. And I think it like that, some people, you know, they're kind of like, oh, this woo-woo stuff, but it's not. It's about putting fully the trust in yourself again, and believing in yourself. It's not that, oh, I'm going to manifest all this, whatever, you know, everyone desires, but it's just that I trust myself to get this. I trust myself to achieve this.
And that I'm worthy of it as well. And you know what I'm doing at the minute, it's the art of allowing, right? And actually, Abraham Hicks. So they do a gorgeous, Esther and Jerry Hicks have a gorgeous, Esther does lovely videos on the art of allowing and how you don't strangle the thing. I'm listening to a lot of Louise Hay at the minute. So I'm hypnotizing myself in the morning and the night, like Louise Sado. And it's actually really working. But just in terms of like, my mindset and stuff, which is really lovely, but this art of allowing. So just letting go, letting go of the outcome and just kind of enjoying your life. You said something there about woo-woo, and there's a lovely book by Dr. David Hamilton, and he talks about why woo-woo works. So he talks a lot about Reiki and manifestation and all
Oh,
these different
yes.
things as well. So he dispels all those myths and puts a scientific spin on them and said, like, they're all based in science, which is great. But what are you manifesting at the minute, if you want to share?
Oh, I'd gladly share. Yeah. So it's financial abundance and stability.
Slay.
So I think it's just to be. Just stability would be really the really strong word there. Because I'm self-employed, I can have like feast or famine, and I have to regulate the feast for the famine. And it can be, and maybe it's some kind of impulsivity in me or something, but it's like, oh, let's go, and I could with the kids last year, I was like, come on, I'm after booking Disneyland, come on, let's go. And it was like 2 weeks off we go, but. And it's essentially to get my own home. That's really where I'm, to get
Okay,
our own
amazing.
home.
Fab.
And I
Yeah.
remember actually contacting you 2 weeks ago. Every big, huge milestone that I hit, and it hits me like a train, but not in the best of circumstances. I lost my first cousin. He was young. He was 40, and it was horrendous. It was horrendous. It was so cruel to be taken so young from a young family. Anyway, but I remember being at the funeral, and I've been at a good few funerals before, like a couple of uncles of mine. And I remember standing there, the night before, like the coffin would have been closed. And I remember standing there and looking in on him and being completely and utterly present, and really, really present. And talking to him in my mind, and thanking him for all the wonderful memories and all these things, and being just so present. Like I've never experienced that before. And I remember really like feeling the grief, like and crying, like so presently. Everything just felt so present. And when I compare that then to when I had my uncle's funeral, and you had your drink in your hand. I'd had a bottle in my hand, and I was supping, and I was looking in, and I was crying, but I wasn't connected to that moment, And so when I came away, and I messaged you after, and I was like, this has been so enormous, enormous. And it was like another kind of a push to say, I will never put a bottle to my mouth again, ever. Because I had that beautiful moment. And it wasn't something I could go, like, with death, there's kind of, you have those few days, and there's no going back to those days. And to be so present and know that I was fully there for that moment, it was fantastic. It was amazing.
And I actually work with a lot of people who are in grief and who have used alcohol to try and cope with the grief. But it's a really complex issue, but it exacerbates grief. It doesn't allow you to process it. It's messy. It's really messy, you know.
And look, I know that's to say nothing on anyone who does decide, because it just the pain, I can only imagine the pain, the pain for the closest ones. So like no judgment, but I just know for myself like that I was just so grateful that I was present for that last moment.
And to really feel, and I
Feel.
suppose That's what we're here to do, is to
Yeah.
feel, whether
Yeah.
we like it or not. And you know, the good comes with the bad, you know. And I suppose it's only the human mind that labels it the good or the bad. It just is, you know. Thanks for sharing. I think it's just really helpful, because like an Irish funeral is so
Yes.
hand in hand with booze. And you know, and I know you had said, you know, it was a lovely experience. Of course it wasn't, but the
Yes.
presence of it was lovely.
Yes.
And the fact that, you know, you didn't feel in any way ostracized. You were able to, you know, connect
And
with
I
people.
actually had people who had, because obviously, with an Irish funeral, it can go on for days, and it did, because he was such a big social media character anyway, and he was such a big presence that, it needed to go on for a few days for everyone to pay their respects. And everyone would say to me, what are you having? What are you having? And I'd say a water, a cup of tea, whatever. And after a few days, so some people kind of were like, you don't drink, do you? And I said, no. And they were like, oh my God, like you don't drink. Like you come from a family of great drinkers and you don't drink. And I said, no, I gave it up very, very consciously, gave it up. And then the next day, I remember the last day, in the pub. And this guy came up to me and he was like, I really just like, how are you doing with this? How do you do it? And I was like, gray area drinker, follow her. You need to get on to her, honest to God. And I went on for a big spiel. And I'd say this man wouldn't even remember asking me this question, but I was ready to give him every piece of information. And
Well,
I said, Fraser, he had sculled pints, but like he didn't even know he was asking me. But honestly, if someone asked me now, I'm like, Olivia, grey area drinker, she'll sort you out. You'll be fine.
he hasn't been in contact, so
No.
come here. Just we might wrap it up because it's the middle of the night here, and I know my lecky bee is calling me and me I'll kindle. But maybe just a couple of things. I loved what you said there about I'm consciously giving it up, and that's the thing. It's you're consciously saying, okay, I'm gonna go through with this. But is there any other kind of little, give me three things that helped you in the last year that will help somebody listening now?
I suppose at the beginning I really was trying to have my family support me. Now they do, but they're very silent about it. And I was like, they're not really supporting me. I had to turn into myself. I had to turn into myself. So it's a really, as much and all as you want the support and you get the support, it is about yourself and really coming in on yourself. And like me, a lot of people that I would say that give up the booze didn't like drink in the first place. I loved it. I loved the taste of a Heineken. I loved the taste of a Guinness. And we're so lucky in this day and age to have those things there. I remember messaging you, I'd say it was like 2 or 3 months in, and I had a can of Heineken Zero, and I said, is this okay? Is this okay for me to drink? And it's on a Wednesday night, and oh my God, is this okay? Am I just replacing one hat? And you were like, calm down. It's a Heineken Zero. Of course, you have it. Off you go. You're not drinking. It's fine. So it's just to give yourself the permission in those areas, I think. Because I did find that I want to drink even the zeros more frequently at the beginning because I was like, I'm just not going to miss out. I'm not going, and I needed just to fulfill that little itch in me or scratch it. But so that was that. It was like, give yourself the permission to drink the zeros. And what else would I say? Oh, like literally, there's no looking back. There's no looking back. I text my wife when I'm out now at parties or going to some events that she mightn't be at. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the best decision I ever made.
Just
A best decision I've ever made. And that's nearly every night I've gone out where she's not with me, or even when she's with me, it's the best decision I've ever made. And even to turn around to my daughters and say, like, yeah, no, mommy doesn't drink.
no,
They're like, what?
gorgeous. It really is.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. You
Thank you so much.
wear it so well. You are so jolly. You're full of the joys, and it's an absolute pleasure. Joanne, where can people follow you if they want to get in touch?
Yeah, so I am an interior designer. So I'm Jo McCo Interior. So it's Joanne McCarthy Colbert, the first two letters of Jo McCo Colbert, Joe McCo Interiors. I'm on Instagram. And yeah, it's the same on Facebook as well. Yeah, so that's where you'll find me. Yeah.
Beautiful. And I will include them in the show notes. Well, look, have
so
a gorgeous
much.
Evening. Thank you. And you are the poster child for alcohol free living. Where you're down in Limerick, aren't you?
Yeah, in Limerick. Yeah.
You're the Limerick
the Limerick lady.
Thanks, Joanne.
Thanks so much, Olivia. Thank you.
No More Booze, the podcast, is produced, mixed, and mastered at the studios of Irish Audio Drama. For more information, visit irishaudiodrama.com.